No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Or the bottom of the eighth inning, I got to take a chance. And like, these guys are up there. So like, I have to treat this like this is a postseason World Series type thing where I might have no chance. Everybody knows that I'm going. I got to show it right here. I end up going, dude, end up being safe. I stole that bag and I'm like, dude, that's sick.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, I'm talking to Ian Miller, who went from walk-on at small Division I Wagner to big league outfielder. Ian is also a big-time personality, so this is a really fun conversation. I just got to sit back and listen to the guy cook for an hour. We talk his experience as a walk-on using his 80-grade speed to earn a spot at Wagner, and then using it to put himself on the prospect map in the Alaska League. He talks his pro ball journey, moving slowly but steadily through the minors, working to earn playing time, changing his swing, his strategy, and mastering both the art of the steal and the finely tuned 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. work ethic, all leading to his 2019 big league debut. If you enjoy Ian here, there's a lot more of him on his podcast, The Nine Hole. You can find him on Instagram and YouTube. Really appreciate him stopping by, walking us through his journey. Episodes from Phenom to the Farm drop every month. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. If you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Mock drafts have started for the 2025 MLB draft. A lot of college baseball coverage, spring training coverage, everything. It is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Ian Miller. All right, joining in on today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, he was a 14th round pick of the Mariners in the 2013 draft out of Wagner College, former big league outfielder Ian Miller. Ian, thank you so much for joining the show.
Kyle, what's going on, brother? It's a pleasure to be here, man. Appreciate you having me here, man. I'm excited to chop it up a little bit, talk some baseball.
I'm excited as well. Before we jump into how you got here, let's talk about what you're doing right now. Tell me about your podcast, your company, and everything you're doing to help youth baseball players.
Yeah. So, man, I wasn't sure where I was going to fit in the coaching space. Knew I wanted to coach, wasn't sure in what capacity I was going to be able to do that. So I started a podcast called the Nine Hole Podcast, just aimed at empowering and benefiting the next generation of nine-hole hitters like me. I was a college walk-on at Wagner College, and from little league to the big leagues, man, I hit in the nine-hole. So the majority of baseball players that get to the big leagues, like, they're not all first-rounders. They're not all SEC players. They're not all Paul Skenes and Shohei Ohtanis, right? It's a lot of grinders that separate, right, and make it to the top level. So that's what the nine-hole's about. I'm trying to provide information to the next generation, man. I have coaches come on. I have players come on. And that's how it kind of started. Got big. We are growing just past 10,000 on Instagram. But the long form stuff is what's on YouTube, right? So that's the stuff that I love. That's like bringing on Tony V from Tennessee and talking about his journey last year. Bringing Jay Johnson on, talking about what it's like to work with Paul Skenes, Dylan Cruz, stuff like that. Getting insight, man. What separates everybody from everybody else? And I get to have these top tier coaches, managers, players come on, provide that information, man. I just try to paint their picture. So we got that going on. 30 million views in the last 6 months. Fantastic. Started a coaching side of the business with the nine hole. So, you know, they don't necessarily, Instagram doesn't just pay you a whole bunch of money for getting that many views. You can earn, obviously, on all the other platforms, man. But like, I needed to have something in place in order to capitalize on that attention, you know, and maximize my reach and what I was going to be able to do. Started a coaching side of the business, all aimed at the mental side of the game, man. So I can't teach a better swing mechanic than the random guy down at DBAT down the street that didn't play past middle school, even though he studied mechanics his whole life. And I played in the big leagues. I cannot give a better hitting lesson than that guy. It's just, I'm not gonna like lie, right? So that's not what I should be doing. The stuff that I know is the stuff in here, right? That a college walk-on is able to make it to the big leagues. I had to go through a whole lot of grinding, right? Adversity, being overlooked, being underpaid. That's just the stuff that I was able to capitalize on to separate. That's what we got going on over here. We're growing. Not to get too much into it, we're going to be bringing somebody on board to be the director of mental performance over here at the nine hole. And he's done a lot of winning aimed at mental performance. So we got a lot of stuff going on. Things are happening, man. We're growing, and that's what the nine hole is. That's what I got going on here, man. That's a long-winded answer. Appreciate you asking me to elaborate.
Well, of course, because on your podcast feed, on your long form, you also talk about your career and your experiences, which is very helpful for someone when they're trying to prep for an interview, give some insight. So I dove in a little bit this morning, a lot of good stuff. I wanna go back. You know, you mentioned, you know, kind of the name of the game for your story, college walk-on, grinder, all that stuff. When you're coming up, when you're in Little League, you know, high school, what was there that was, hey, this could potentially be a big leaguer or, you know, a good Division I player and stuff like that? And where were you overlooked, or where did you need development?
Man, so I always had athleticism, right? So I did not mature, didn't hit puberty, if you will, really until like going into my junior year of high school, man. So I was a pipsqueak dude, right? Everybody's growing beards and stuff in high school.
Buddy, I feel you there.
Crazy dude, right? It's some guys go quick. Some guys are kind of behind, man. I was a late bloomer, but I use that to my advantage, man. So I always had speed, right? If a kid that's 5'5", 5'6", can run a 6'6", that is above average. That's fantastic. That's not going to get you to the big leagues, okay? I needed to just outlast everybody to get to 6 foot if I was eventually going to get there. And then that 6'6", 60-yard dash got chipped down to a 6'2". So that's how I didn't get overlooked. I was able to get my foot in the door by taking the little tool that I had, even though I was underdeveloped, man. I was physically unimposing, right? And I was able to maximize that as I grew, as I matured. I was able to keep my head down, even though I was overlooked with all the physicality type stuff, being second on the depth chart, dude. Seventh grade Legion, I got cut from my Legion team. Devastating, bro. Devastating. Junior year of high school. So I'm on like my varsity team for the first time. I'm trying out for the Carpenter Cup, which is like a nice little summer program with wood bats. And like, they take the best people from the county and Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and I get cut from that, dude. Like, I wasn't there. So like, the stuff that I needed to lean on was my little tool that I had, like that speed aspect of stuff. As I matured, I had to lean into that even more, double down. And so the stuff that I was deficient in, whether the glove, I was pretty raw out in the outfield, hitting, could never quite figure the thing out with hitting, dude. Hitting is hard, right? But I could run faster than everybody else. So hopefully that answers the question.
You grew up in a baseball family, but was baseball like your sport? Like, you were, this is the thing I want to do. I know in high school you played some football. Speed plays well in football, plays like a little easier in football. Really? I mean, football, you're obviously like getting hit. That kind of sucks. But like, where did you know that? Because if you're going to be a walk-on, if you're going to like try to take this thing out of high school without getting money for it, without getting a lot of attention for it, you have to really love it. And did you know that this was going to, like, did you want baseball to be your thing, or did you have other interests?
So I was definitely in love with football. Man, I was in love with football, but I got one of those concussion things, dude, where I was playing up. Because I'm smaller than everybody. So in seventh grade, it's like it's 140-pound weight limit, and I'm 85 pounds, right, hanging with the big boys, got a concussion. I'm like, yo, this stinks. This stinks. So I always played baseball, but it wasn't necessarily the focus. In high school, man, freshman and sophomore year, I played football. And when it looked like I had a better chance to go all in on baseball and make it to the next level, I just wanted to get to college, dude. If I could play in college, anything can happen, dude. I think I made a conscious decision going into like probably senior year of high school. I'm like, hey, stop everything. I think I have the best chance of kind of making it to the next level with baseball, dude. To be completely honest with you, I really wasn't a good student, dude. Got in trouble a lot. So I really, the stars kind of had to align, dude. I started at a public school, was asked to leave, ended up at a Catholic school, dude, got the head on right, still messed up a little bit, but it's like baseball kind of fell into place like last second, dude. So I kind of had to get my head on straight before I was able to make that next leap. Looked like baseball was going to be my best chance to do that.
So how did you wind up at Wagner College? Because you did the travel ball, the wood bat, showcase circuit kind of thing without, you know, scholarship offers coming through. Like what made Wagner the call for you?
Dude, what made Wagner the call for me was flashback to, like I said, I alluded to it earlier. I tried out for that junior year team, the Carpenter Cup. I got snipped from that junior year, came back my senior year, and Wagner College was there at the game. And so, like, I made the team, ended up getting out there. I was a second half player, so I didn't even start the game. And Joe Litt, the head coach of Wagner, was out there, who I, like, spam outreach to, right? I outreached to everybody, sent emails to everybody, let everybody know, yo, I just made the Carpenter Cup team. If you need somebody, come check me out. I'll be here. Joe Litt showed up, and I laid down a base hit bunt with a wood bat at this Carpenter Cup game my senior year when I got banged from that team the year before. Showed up, pissed off, ready to take that shit, right? Sorry for cursing. But that's where I got seen, dude. That's where I got seen. Rest is history. It's crazy how that happened. So, like, that's where the nine hole, the idea, I feel like everything subconsciously started being born, man. You know what I mean? That's how it all happened.
So you get there as a walk-on, and if you're coming in as a scholarship player or a highly recruited player, there are not promises made, but there's certain expectations of this is what it's going to look like for you. This is the role we have for you in the program. When you hit campus in the fall, you know, when did you go from walk-on, preferred walk-on, whatever, to, hey, I'm going to be a contributor in the spring? Like, when did you know that you had kind of shifted your status?
So, dude, it's crazy how that worked. So I came on raw, dude. There was nothing promised to me. Nothing at all. So, like, preferred walk-on, dude, I wasn't even there. You know what I mean? I had to show up. I still remember the faces of the dudes that showed up and tried out for that Wagner College team, that D1 team, showing up in jeans and shit, not having any idea what's going on. Like, I was with those guys. I had to outcompete those guys. I'm like, you know what? Ugh. Got this. Got it. So, like, I showed up in the fall, and I'll never forget it, dude. First AB of the fall, scrimmage. Step on the field. We didn't even have, like, a practice yet, dude. Hit a ground ball to the shortstop. The dude that won, like, all-conference shortstop the year before, Marty, beat it out. Beat it out. Hit it a step to his left. This is a D1 shortstop. Proven. Two steps to the left. Smell you. Beat it by a step. I'm like, dude, I got it. Swear to God, dude. No fabrication. In there, knew it. Getting fired up talking about it. Dude, my dad ended up passing away right around Thanksgiving when we were going into break. So, like, I earned that spot in the fall. Then my dad died randomly. It's crazy. So then I got incompletes. I didn't get to go back to school, man. I was home, like, with my mom and my brother, you know, man of the house. Just had a lights out freshman fall, made the team, was told, dude, they're going to try to give me scholarship money this for sophomore year. I just got to, you know, keep grinding. All this stuff happens back at home. Then, like, I get incomplete with my grades and stuff, dude. And I have to, like, battle back. Then I know I made the team, right? They let me know kind of like, hey, dude, you got a lot going on. Take your time coming back. I end up having like a 231 freshman year, not a good freshman year. But, like, I think going into the spring after I came back, got my head on right, dude, made sure the family was good. I think that's when I knew you know, they're starting to talk about some scholarship stuff later down the road, maybe a half scholarship, right? Get, dude, tuition wasn't cheap, dude. I think it was like 50 beans per year to be there in 2010, dude. That's a lot. So I think like around there is when I kind of knew, wrapped my head around it, dude. Long-winded answer.
No, I've got to ask you. So I played at a Southern school. I played Division II, and we would have the every year start the year. We would have the Northern schools come down, get out of the snow, come play here. So each year when you're at Wagner, you take that whatever that is. I know you guys played at Hawaii, State, at Virginia Tech, and like I think of those schools as Northern. But like, what is the getting out of gym practices? Like it seems like it's an end of the fire thing, because if you're playing at a Southern school, like I played at a school in Texas, like we're out on the field in January getting live reps and stuff like that. Like what did those first 3 weeks, if you're a Northern school and you're down there in the South playing on the road, you know, getting those live ABs, actually being on a field, like how is that a good way to start the year? Or is it more difficult, you'd say?
Bro, so right off the bat, Kyle, I'm not even gonna sugarcoat it. We know that us as Northeast Grinders, the underdogs, that our program's probably being paid to come out that way. We're going out there to get shellacked, right?
So
we're trying to get out there, bro. And not that the players are even conscious of that, but like we're going out to South Carolina, or excuse me, we're going out to NC State, and like Trey Turner's there and Carlos Rodon's there. What do I think is going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to fight, dude. I'm going to lead off the game. You look at the scoreboard afterwards, you're like, damn, dude, 20-1, you know? And it's like, yeah, we got our asses kicked. What do you mean? Right? I love that stuff, bro.
Did
I
you
love
have to
that
dig
stuff.
In against Rodon?
No, I didn't. Thank the Lord. But like, I got to play against Trey Turner and he was launching home runs, bro. He was like an underclassman still too. Like he was different. I love those games. Right? Like I had fearless leadership when I was at Wagner. So even if the coaches, Joe Litt, JC, Jim Carone, who's now over at McDaniel in Maryland, like those guys didn't waver. They didn't have any type of like doubt, dude. They didn't show it. It was easy to feed off of that, dude. But we knew going out there, bro, it's tough. These guys have been on the field the whole year. Right. These guys got great facilities. My mom needed to pay money for me to have like Nike gear and shit at Wagner College. Right. I had to fundraise, dude, in order to get my 3-2 softball cleats. You know what I mean? Like these guys are swimming in Adidas and Under Armour. It's great. They've been on the field all year. That's great, dude. Those practices in the gym suck. Facing live pitchers, throwing bangers from weird arm angles in a cage, dude, with a white wall and like white in the gym, it sucks. But in my opinion, it builds character. I think I would rather get my ass kicked early. Okay. So I always started on a back foot. My back was against the wall. So anytime I'd go into Northeast Conference play, right, like a month into the season, dude, I would never be hitting above 220, right? The Mendoza line would be, if I was going into conference play hitting 200, W, dude, because those arms are different. Like, that feels different. They got crowds and stuff. They got people that trap. Like, we're getting heckled, dude. What? You know? I think it's great because then you have to play up for the rest of the year. You know that you just played the toughest competition possible. And, like, if you want to make it to the big leagues or get drafted, you got to hang with those boys anyway. You might as well see what that's like early, play up to that, and then, like, play against your competition. That's the way I looked at it, dude. It was tough, but like, what are you going to do? You know, it's cool to get exposure. It's cool to get that type of exposure, get to see Hawaii and stuff, man, get to see some of the Florida schools. It's crazy.
Well, in terms of talking exposure, you go from your walk on at Wagner, you know, fine freshman year, you break out as a sophomore, you go play in the Alaska League, and suddenly, you know, you're going from in the spring, you're playing at a school with very few big leaguers. You guys had Andrew Bailey and not a whole lot else when you got there. You know, and then you go play in the Alaska League where, you know, heavy majority of that league is going to get drafted, going to play some type of pro ball, playing at big schools. What did that experience do for your confidence? And then like at what point during that summer did you say, oh, not only like, can I hang with these guys? Like I'm going to be able to hang with them and play on the next level.
Yeah, dude. I remember, so it was everything, bro. Right. So I started off on the wrong foot at Wagner College, started slow, you build a reputation over there, right? As a dude that can't really hit and stuff. And then look, I didn't necessarily light the world on fire the summer going in, excuse me, into my sophomore year, dude. So I had a lot to prove, man. Had a decent sophomore year, man. Like you said, started hitting a little bit, stealing bags. When I got out there, I still had to prove it. I wasn't an immediate starter. There were dudes that were promised stuff, right? There were guys that came from legit programs, some even younger than me, that were probably told that they were going to be playing, right? I still remember those names. That's great. Dude, I had a fantastic manager out there. His name was Chris Gordon. And he is, I believe, he's the director of baseball ops right now for the South Carolina Gamecocks, man. And his program's nasty. Dude, I remember playing for that guy, and I was hitting 231 when the All-Star game was rolling around. I think the All-Star game was like 2 weeks out. I was bunting. I was stealing at a stupid clip, right? But I wasn't necessarily hitting that much. And it's still like you're 50, 60 ABs deep into the season. So if you get hot, you catch a 3-for-4 game, dude, you're all of a sudden hitting 285. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that. So like I remember I hit a triple, dude. Hit a triple in the left center gap, and I slid into third base. No, I didn't. It wasn't a triple. Sorry. I went first to third. It was in the left center gap, dude. I went first to third. And I slid into third base. Guy made a nice throw. And I remember Chris Gordon came up to me, and I'm like, yo, coach, I know we got the All-Star game coming up here in 2 weeks. And I know that there's like a scout week around that All-Star game. If no one else wants to be part of that All-Star game, dude, I'll do it. Right? Because we got guys that are from bigger programs that are huffing and puffing. It's like, ah, dude, I could have a 3 day off, All-Star break. I'm an SEC baseball, you know, ACC. Like, I'm out here, dude, giving it my all. Like, yeah, I'm hitting 260, 270, but like, it'd be cool to be off. And I'm like, bro, what? Okay. So I remember sliding into third base, dude, telling Chris Gordon that. He's like, bro, you already got my vote to be in there. And I was like, damn. Never forget it. Season turned like that, bro. It's crazy. Started raking, had confidence, nuts. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy what a good manager can really do for you, bro. I remember that as like the time that it snapped, and I just had confidence. I'm like, bro, this guy believes in me, bro. This guy believes in me. Then everybody kind of started falling in line. You know, you start proving yourself a little bit. Then everybody starts talking about you different. Everybody starts treating you different. I felt that around there.
And how did that translate, and how would you say that impacted you when you go from, you know, again, something like the Alaska League, where you're surrounded with guys who have the expectation of getting drafted, to coming back for your junior year, where I would imagine you were one of few, if not the only one on your team who's like, I'm playing this year and then I'm getting out of here. Like, did it improve your game? Did it put more pressure on your game? Like, how do you feel like you handled that draft junior year?
I feel like I handled it great. I also had again, fantastic leader in Jim Caron, who not just like shielded me from everything that was going on, but like set the shit up, dude. So like I knew that I was getting attention, started making Baseball America perfect game, like draft things, top prospect, Alaska League. So like I'm not dumb, but like JC took, I think, the majority of the burden. You have an advisor at that time who you can talk to, can't necessarily represent you. He's not your agent until you're a professional. So JC, in my opinion, took the majority of the blow of that. And he tried to have a winning program. Dude, I think I played up to that level. I think I liked that. I liked that a lot. So I didn't have to do anything different. I was able to take my little Northeast ass and go out there to the West Coast and show everybody that I'm better than everybody, right? I was able to come back, show those dudes. I feel like it picked them up too. So we had Nick Deeney drafted like the next year or two. Then we had Ben Ruta, dude, Nolan Long, like some dudes came out of there. You know what I mean? I feel like maybe I was able to show some of those dudes like what's possible.
What was draft day like for you? What was the, and kind of in the run up too, because you guys, your last game of the season is a couple weeks before the draft. So you have that run up, you have that weight, you know, what were the conversations like? And with you, you have you're a college junior, you have the smallest amount of leverage. You have a little more leverage than the senior, but you're also a small program college junior where they're like, you really want to go back? You really want to go back? So what was that? What were those conversations like?
Dude, so I was pretty adamant, like up front, man, obviously I just want to play, dude. I just, I'm not looking for any type of money. It'd be cool to get 100K, which at in 2013 would dictate that you'd get taken in the top 10 rounds, you know, because there were some rules in place where it's like I got 75 grand in the 14th round because I couldn't get past 100K. And I don't even know what the rules were. I just rolled with it, dude, whatever. Yeah, I didn't have a ton of leverage. Dude, I wasn't going back my junior year if I had an opportunity to get drafted. Dude, to be completely honest with you, I got drafted on the third day, and I was hoping, expecting, praying to go on the second day. So when I didn't get taken on the second day, man, of course, like I was a little bit pissed, and like frustrated. But like, dude, whatever. I could have got drafted in the last round. I would have went with it. You know what I mean? So draft day was dope. I had an idea that I was gonna go. Wasn't 100% sure who I was gonna go to, and you know. That's a cool call when that happens, dude. They didn't even have like video of it. It was just I was streaming it from my computer onto the TV, and it's like it was just a video, just excuse me, like a picture and an audio recording. So it's not like I saw anything anyway, bro. But it was cool. It was a cool experience.
You said 75K, so that's back in the take care of your own housing days, take care of most of your own food days, taxes take a chunk out of that. Like how, you know, how far were you able to stretch that 75K?
Bro, okay, so I am a CRPC now, so I am designated, and I'm a wealth advisor, and I'm credentialed in retirement, and so I know how absurd this is gonna sound, but I blew that shit in a year, my guy, right? I had a baller year, and then like, okay, then what? So my mom financed my journey through the minor leagues, dude. She grinded. She let me live large that first year. I learned a lesson. And then like she did everything she could. So that money did not stretch very far. Knowing what I know now, like that money, obviously, if you were to average in a, you know, just a 10 or 11% return on the S&P or whatever metric you want to use, it would be worth a lot more now than zero, right? But yeah, the reality of the situation is things are a little bit different now, which is nice. There's some rules in place where maybe they treat guys a little bit more, like better. Maybe they make some more money. Obviously, like we've seen the low end of the pay kind of go up. I think it's might be past 25, 30K,
Yeah,
right?
more
That's
money,
huge.
and they cover housing, which is huge because you're playing back in the day where it's like find an apartment, find a short-term
Figure
lease,
it out,
usually
bro.
bad terms.
Figure it out. Hey, first game's in 5 days, bro. You gotta go figure it out. Let me know. Oh yeah, and let me know, like just write it down. And we're like, bro, what? You know what I mean? Dude, what? I've never lived on my own before. It's crazy how that works, bro. So yeah, that was my experience, man. There's also zero financial education, zero financial literacy in not just college, but professional. Dude, so I got no education on what to do with my money. I got no hints, I got no ideas. And the only financial education I got was when I got called up and my agent told me, dude, make sure you take the most out for your retirement on every paycheck. And that's the only thing I'm going to tell you. So that's the most financial education I got. And thank God he told me that, right? It's crazy how that works.
So you get to Pro Bowl, you'd had the experience in the Alaska League playing against big competition, you'd played against big schools, but what was that jump like for you? Was there a welcome to Pro Bowl moment of this is a little different than playing at Wagner?
So, yeah, I think I got shocked into place, man, pretty quick. So I remember striking out my first at bat in Pro Ball, and Chris Prieto like making fun of me on the way back. He's the manager, dude. He was like an outfield coordinator, bounced around. I'm not 100% sure where he's at right now, but I remember him having a welcome to Pro Ball talk with me in front of everybody on the bus microphone on the way back to our like hotel, and it's like, dude, welcome to Pro Ball. I had no idea what was going on, dude. But pretty quickly, like I gained my footing. So like coming off the bench in a professional baseball game, whether you're in rookie ball or you're in the big leagues, is hard. It is hard. But when you start, you have the best chance. If you have an idea, you're gonna get three or four at bats, and you know you're gonna face the starter probably twice, at least three, two, maybe three times. I'm licking my chops, bro. It doesn't matter who I go up against. I'm confident I'm going to be able to go 1 for 3 at least. Coming off the bench is tough. So like I got the second game in my professional career, I got a start. I think I went maybe 2 for 4, like 1 for 4 maybe. I remember swiping a bag, dude, right off the bat. First pitch, I was on base, and I'm like, bro, this is the same game. This guy's throwing 94 as opposed to 88 in the Northeast, and like they can throw a changeup that looks nasty, but like they still got to throw it over the 17-inch plate. And like, yeah, I'm using wood bats and they break and shit a lot. That's tough, but it's the same game, dude. I would win the game on the bases more so at the plate, you know? So like I adjusted, you know? That's the way I looked at it, bro. I ended up hitting like 305, I think, my first year in pro ball, and I'm like, okay, I can do this, man.
How does base stealing change as you move up the ladder? Like obviously the higher you go, the better the catchers are, things like that. But like you get on base in rookie ball versus you get on base in AAA. Like what are the signs you're looking for to I feel good about going forward in this situation?
So, dude, yes, the arms get better, the moves get better, the way they hold get better, the staffs, the pitching coaches, the tells, the game plans, they get better. But you also get better. So you refine your mechanics. It is when you get to AA, AAA, and you steal 100, 200 bags, and it's like, okay, I got this under the belt. It's like you have the just like you're hitting. Just like you're hitting. If you get 1,000 minor league at bats, dude, you have a refined mechanic. You know it works. You know it's efficient. It's the same thing with running, bro. It's the same thing with running. So, like, yeah, these guys get way better. Some of them have balk moves, bro. Some of them are lightning quick. They can hold the running game, and that's tough to steal a bag on. But, like, I also got better. So, my tells had a lot to do with the pitcher. I never worried about the catcher, bro. So, like, we're going to face dudes that are sub 2 pop times and maybe even like sub 1.9. That's crazy. Nothing you can do. You steal the bag off the pitcher regardless. So like the things that I did, one, man, I maximized my lead. So like when I understood this, doesn't matter how quickly I can get the top speed, but like of course it does. If I maximize my lead, I give myself the best chance of getting to second base quicker with a shorter distance more than anybody else. All I have to do is get the top speed as quickly as possible. Okay, so like what happens if you can't get the top speed quicker than I can get the top speed? Well, you can give yourself a better chance by getting a bigger lead than me, right? So I was faster than everybody. I tried to pair that with the biggest lead possible. I tried to take a big lead, so much so that it would be bang bang every time a pitcher threw over. So like I had to be on my game. I did that for 7 years in the minor leagues before, you know, I got a call up to the big league. So it's like I perfected that for 7 years, dude. And obviously a bunch in college, but dude, the lead, huge. How my first move was, I was efficient. I wanted to get, so like if I'm taking my lead at first base, what is this called? For second base is over there. Am I perpendicular with the bag? Am I in line with the bag? Like parallel, right? Whatever that's called. I wanted to be perpendicular, boom, with the bag. Like I wanted to be in line with the base as quickly as like that's the move I wanted to make as quickly as possible. How can I refine that first move to make it quicker, more efficient than everybody else? Everything else will just take care of itself. I paired that with a big lead and like I was able to do sincere damage. You know what I mean? And I stayed on that, bro. I think that's probably what obviously kept me around and, you know, helped me feed my family.
So if you're stealing off the pitcher, were there times you'd go into a series and at you know at this in the minor leagues you're playing the same team a bunch of times, you're getting information. Were there times where you would go into a series and know that there are a couple guys on that staff that you're just like, I'm gonna eat this weekend?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely, dude. Yeah, you know who they are. You know who they are. You don't, it's okay. So when you're playing these guys over and over and over and over and over again, like in pro ball, like in AA, AAA, you face these guys year after year after year. You move up with them. You don't just learn the staffs and you're like, oh, I'm going to eat in the month of May because we play the lug nuts twice. It's like, dude, you know the individual guys. It's like you're licking your chops when these guys get warm in the bullpen. You're like, bro, I hope I get on base because I'm going to steal standing up easy, like left and right. This guy cannot hold the running game. Like, for sure. You know those guys. You know the staffs. You know the players. It's awesome.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
So talk about, you're saying if I get on base. So as a speed guy, what was your mentality in the box? And did that change over the course of your career? Because you obviously, we'll talk about it, noted in a scouting report that you did a swing change kind of midway through your minor league career. But like as a speed guy who did not hit many home run. You had your first 2 years in the minors, you had one more home run than me in the minors, which is big donuts. So what, like you're going in, you obviously know speed is your game. You're not, and you know, it's not the goal isn't to get on base. The goal is to get on base and then get two. Kind of, you know, did that vary today bad, or did you have kind of a plan every time you went up of this is what I want to do?
I get exactly what you're saying, dude. So yes. Okay. So that's where you were talking about with the swing change. Even with the swing change, my approach never wavered. So what I found out pretty quickly, actually, bro, is that you are only as strong as your routine and as your approach. So it's like there's two things. You can either play up to the level. So like I always played up, dude. I went to Alaska. I was a Wagner College walk-on, and I'm playing up with the professional guys. Like you can play up to the competition and you can rise, or you can falter and you can revert back to your training, right? So like I needed to revert back to my training, dude. I needed to practice like I wanted to play, dude. And I never wanted to deviate from that. So I took my approach, this bulletproof approach that I wanted to have at the plate. I wanted to make sure I could bring it out in a game and play at a championship caliber level in hopes that I get a chance up in the big leagues. In order for me to be able to do that as a little speed guy that isn't starting every single game, I needed to own practice. I needed to take that approach and I needed to freaking own it in practice, and not just in practice, in the cage, off the tee. So like I was all in on the fastball, all in on the fastball. I was all in on the fastball in the middle of the plate, fastball middle. I wanted to treat it like a 2-0 count. I wanted to be aggressive. If it is a 2-0 count and I'm hunting a fastball right down the middle and this guy throws a painted fastball for a strike, am I pissed off that I'm down, that it's 2-1 now, right? Or did I win that pitch because I was locked into my approach? And like, I'm not going to swing at the pitcher's pitch at a plus count, dude. What are the chances I get a hit there? Probably low. Like, I wanted to take that approach into the cage when I'm doing flips off the tee, right? Like, off the machine on the, like, when I started owning that batting practice, it started translating into the game, dude. I didn't have to do too much. I didn't have to like recreate the wheel. I just owned. I owned noon to 6:30 p.m. I owned that. I owned it. Like I owned that. So then at 7:05, dude, I could just play. You know what I mean? So like the approach was huge. I needed to own it in practice. If that makes sense.
Talk to me about the noon to 6:30 p.m. I mean, that's 6.5 hours. Like what
Hell
is
yeah.
the, you know, and it's a long season. What it, you know, you get to the ballpark at noon for 7:05 first pitch. What's the routine? Like once you got to the point where you're like, this is my routine, this is what I do. What did that look like?
Yeah. So dude, just just to piggyback off of like what it was like in 2021 for me, my last year. So I learned pretty early that when I got to the ballpark and I got a good sweat in, like I got after it, whether it is getting after it in batting practice, running shit down, or getting a workout in before you even get to batting practice, like I needed to lock in by exerting energy and getting after it a little bit, shocking the system. There are different ways of doing that, dude. Whether you want to work out right before the game, whatever. I showed up at noon because I did not want to be rushed. I wanted to make sure that I got everything in. So 2021, dude, I had Nick Martini and Trace Thompson with me in the Iowa clubhouse. And so like I would show up at noon and these fucking guys would already be ready to work out if they weren't already working out. So like I could play up to that. All I needed to do was hang around these guys and see what they're doing, right? These guys are older than me, still in the game, still doing better than me, and like they're still going up and down. So like there's clues there. Success leaves clues. These guys are showing up before everybody else. All I have to do is do what they're doing in order to have the success that they're having. So like that was easy for me. I played with a whole bunch of guys earlier in my career with the Mariners. They're still in the big leagues now that would show up and do more than anybody else. And so I was able to take that throughout the entirety of my career. Show up at noon, get a workout in, dude. Let's say that goes until one, right? Then I come in, I get a protein shake, I relax a little bit, I get ready. Maybe 1:30, get in the cage. Okay? We hit early in the cage, 1:30 to about 2:15. Then since we are the home team, maybe it's 2:30 batting practice. Maybe that 2:30 batting practice goes until like 4, right? You want to get an hour and a half in there, get the pitchers out there, get stretched, get thrown. You come back in here, man, and like what do you need to do? Do you need to attack something more in the weight room? Do you need to get in the training room, get something done? Like usually you are working on something in between batting practice and then the game. We had a lot of 6:05 games in Iowa, right? So like maybe we were done closer to 5 for a 7 o'clock game, but like it still rings true, bro. It's either you get your workout in after batting practice, before you get your extra swings done, either before batting practice or after, and like you get your maintenance done so you can prepare and get ready for the game, get loose for first pitch. I mean, right before the game, right? So it's like, dude, we always have stuff to do. The stuff that the guys that would show up and like do the same thing day after day, Trace Thompson, Nick Martini, like those guys are still like around and kicking, right? It's great. That's how I learned it, bro. That's kind of where I was going with that. I know that's like a going left and right, but I'm getting fired up about that because we see it a lot today, man, where guys will have success and then they'll stop doing the shit that got on there, right? Because they're having success. And it's like, okay, what's the first thing guys do when they get on a 15 game hitting streak? They wear the same underwear, they wear the same shirt, they wear the same socks. And it's a superstition. And then the first thing that goes is the top hand drill that they start off with, right? Because they feel sexy. I think it's the same way with year after year of getting better and improving, dude. If stuff works, man, I don't know, man. Stick with it. Double down on it. I think it's
I love
important.
going in the weeds on stuff like this. I want so something I took from your podcast that I was listening to. You had a story also that kind of paid off when you got to the big leagues of just like learning from Nelson Cruz or being around Nelson Cruz in big league spring. When you get those opportunities to go be the pinch runner in the ninth inning of a big league spring game, or just get to be in that dugout, that locker room, whatever. What are the things that you can learn from guys who've been doing it for so long, but in such a short period of time? You're not getting to see the big leaguers, as they are on a day in, day out, but you get those glimpses in spring. Like, are there a lot of learning moments there in that environment?
Yes, dude. Yes, definitely. There are a lot of learning moments in that environment, but more so, there are a lot of relationship building moments in that environment. So, like, in my experience, I would win spring training. So, like, in the off chance that I wasn't in Major League spring training and I would be coming over and pinch running for these guys, dude, I would use that to see how they prepared, see how they went about their business, how, like, what their mindset was, how relaxed they were. And, like, I would use it to get to know them. So, like, I would try to make them laugh or say something just that wouldn't inconvenience them, but would try to, like, add to the situation, right? Get to know them a little bit. Like, I would always say thanks to the coaches for having me over here, bro. I get, $70 meal money for being over here and backing up Nelson Cruz. Sign me up, dude. Appreciate you having me over here, right? Whenever you need me, let me know. But I would use that time to like build that stuff, dude. So like a guy like Nelson Cruz, So he was over with the Mariners, bro. I remember before he would go into the games, like I'm backing up and I'm like, yo, Mr. Cruz, I'll feed the tea for you. Let me check out what your routine is. I'd shut my mouth, I'd let him go about his routine, and I would just feed this guy, be like, yo, I'll pick up the balls, whatever you need, just let me watch you work. He would respect that. Did that enough times over there as a minor league backup nobody that when I got over, I got traded. Dude, I got traded to the Twins. I got called up. New organization. I know nobody. And like Nelson Cruz was the familiar face that I knew. He took me under his wing, man, introduced me to everybody, led me kind of like where I needed to go. Was a great model for like how to work hard and just get after it. But like that all started in spring training from years back. You know what I mean? Those little interactions. I wasn't just there to participate. You know what I mean? I was there to like be a part of the shit. You know what I mean? Like I'm not there just to go with the flow and like collect $75 meal money. Like, dude, I'm trying to be that guy's teammate. And like, I got to learn how I fit in. So I think that really helped me kind of learn how to be in a clubhouse, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 2017, you have this breakout season, Mariners minor league player of the year, all this stuff. Talk to me about the work that led to that in the 2016 offseason, rebuilding your swing or making swing changes. Like what motivated that process of like, hey, I need to change something up if I'm going to be a more impactful hitter? And then how long did it take to do that? Because we've had guys on this who have come on the show and said, I tried the swing thing, I tried to change my swing, and it messed me up. So what you, that's a leap of faith to make that change in something that's got you there.
Yeah, dude. So I'm typing this in to make sure I triple check this, dude. I don't want to bring somebody out and have it be the wrong information, dude. No, I'm 100% correct. So like D Gordon came over to the Mariners, coming over to 2017, right? So he always talked to me about like playing small ball. Obviously, this was the year after I just had. He really like showed me the small ball, how to lay down a base hit bunt, how to maximize that. The year that I had in 2017 was I got to watch Jerod Dyson go about his business. I saw that he choked up, dude. It didn't make any sense. Like, why is this guy choking up in an 0-0 count? Why is this guy choking up in a 2-0 count? And I wanted to make sure I fact checked this so I didn't just like throw D Gordon in there as well. But D Gordon confirmed this being a speed guy. I got to ask him the same thing that I asked Jerod Dyson, dude. And it's like, hey, where do we primarily hit the baseball when we don't impact it on the barrel? And I'm like, okay, let me think about this. So I'm breaking out a baseball bat right now just to kind of like talk about it. So like when I would look at my baseball bat, the marks would be not on the barrel, not on the sweet spot. The majority of them would be like in. So I would get jammed. That's where these marks are. Like I stand on the plate. I want dudes to throw in. My strength is not hitting the ball in. I want to stand on the plate so like I can get everything away. That's my strong suit, dude. So like I would get jammed a lot. What really helped me in 2017 was this idea that like I should choke up an inch. So like these speed guys were doing it. I'm seeing everybody else that I look up to doing it. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Here I am. I tried it for the first year in 2017. Like, I'm not changing anything other than moving up an inch where I hold the bat. Not necessarily getting a smaller bat. I like the size of my bat, dude. Whatever. I choked up an inch, bro. And those balls that I was hitting jammed went on the barrel. And like, I couldn't get out that year, bro. It was crazy. It's crazy how that worked.
You hit some home runs too.
I think I
They
had
finally
four.
finally
Yeah, I
came
think I
in.
had
That's
four.
quite, I mean, if you could go into a year and say, I'm going to quadruple my career home run total. That's usually a win.
Yeah, bro. I didn't do anything. I did not do anything different, other than try to be more direct to the baseball, and like choke up. So like I needed to be more efficient. We talked about that with the stolen base stuff. So like, yeah, those guys get better, but you get better as well. You find out what works. It's the same thing with the swing, bro. I needed to get a little bit more refined, a little bit more efficient. Dude, getting on top of the plate and choking up, even in a 2-0 count, helped me, you know?
So 2019, you're a AAA player now. Like you're knocking on the door. With the kind of player you are, you're not the top prospect who it's like, we're just waiting for a spot to open up for this guy, or we're gonna make a spot for this guy. How much does that impact your day to day, where you're kind of thinking about, I got to do all the things that I need to get done, but I'm also keeping track of, you know, who's getting hurt, if there's a need for a fourth outfielder, if someone goes down, like how do you, if the door is not being forced open for you, as it is with a lot of top prospects, how does it affect the mentality of I'm waiting for this call, but I don't know exactly how to do it unless I just light the world on fire?
Yeah, dude. So 2019 was the year that I debuted in the big leagues, right? And I had to get traded away in order to get that opportunity. And so 2019, I'm 27 years old. I am the oldest guy in minor league spring training. I don't even get an invite to big league spring training. I was there the year before in 2018. And then I go to the Arizona Fall League and I win the Arizona Fall League World Series, dude. I get a ring, right? We won the championship. And here I am backing up dudes that are 21, 22 years old in big league camp. I'm 27 years old, right? So like, yeah, that sucked. How I was able to get over that, dude, was by focusing in on the stuff that I needed to do day by day. So like we talk about that owning the 12 to 6:30 p.m. Like if I'm worried about anything other than owning my first round in the cage or owning my flips or owning my BP, if I'm worried about the moves, the subsequent moves, the roster moves, call up, call down, why is this dude getting an opportunity? Why am I not? I lose that 6.5 hour window from noon to 6:30 in order to just beat everybody else, to be more clean, more crisp, right? More efficient, more quality, more dynamic, get ready for the game. Like I just have to own that. That's how I was able to do it, right? I did not deviate from my approach. Fastball middle. It was still fastball middle in 2019, the same way it was in 2017. It's just, I tweaked my mechanics a little bit more. That's the only thing, right? I tried to catch the ball out a little bit more out in front. So I tried to be even more efficient than I was in 2019 in order to catch the ball out in front. That's the only thing that were different. The way that I was able to overcome that stuff, dude, was by like fully committing to the process. As redundant and as like corny as that sounds, dude, that's the only way I was able to do it.
So then walk me through the trade and then walk me through the call, because they really go hand in hand, couple weeks difference.
Yeah. Dude, I ended up being Jerry's 100th trade. So it's September 1st had passed. No. It was August. So like, I think it's August 30. I don't remember actually what August 1st. I think August 1st is the deadline.
August 1st, yeah.
For non-roster players, right? And so I'm like, I'm not on the roster. I'm banging, stealing some bags, playing some good defense. Sucks. Doesn't look like I'm going to get traded. And then like, I think it was the 10th or the 11th. We're playing in OKC. It's like crazy stuff's happening. We're facing a knuckleballer, and I get a base hit off a fastball from a knuckleballer. A whole bunch of shit happens. It's crazy how that works. And then afterwards, there's a phone call from Darren Brown gets a phone call in the dugout after the game. And for some crazy reason, I knew it was about me. I knew it was about me. Like I'm grabbing my stuff. I got my notebook, like writing down how my ABs went, all this stuff. And I see Darren Brown take a phone call. I'm like, oh, that's for me. I just knew it. I get into the locker room and I hear him say to Roy Howe, when we get into the locker room, he goes, Roy, you're going to love this, as he goes into the coach's room. And I just knew that's about me. I spent a lot of time with those guys. So I know those guys were pulling for me. They call me in. They tell me I'm getting traded. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. Sick. I'm ready to rock. And then it's like, okay, now you got to go to Rochester. My now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we're in Tacoma. She's got to stay there and like pack up while I go chase the dream in Rochester. And it's crazy how it works, but it happened quick, dude. So I go over to Rochester, play there for 3 weeks. I knew I was there for. Dude, I knew these guys were traded for me because September 1st is coming. So I'm fired up. I'm getting treated different, right? I'm playing. And like I remember there was this one instance. I'm going to butcher his name, dude. Is it Levine? Right? The GM, one of the assistants.
Yeah, Thad Levine.
Okay, dude. So there were some front office members there to watch us play, dude. I think it was Buffalo before they made it like a big league stadium, 2020, right? Yeah. So 2019, it's a dumpy stadium there. And I remember these guys were there. These guys were there to make like the final call before roster expanded. And I got a situation, dude, where there is a pitcher who is a 1-2 to the plate, and the catcher is like pretty solid. So like we're talking 1-9, 2-0, right? So it's going to be, I have to steal off of a pitcher that is a slide step 1-2. And it's like...
And the thing you're angling for is to be the postseason fast guy.
So like this, it the stars aligned where I got a walk and it's the it's like the bottom of the seventh inning or the bottom of the eighth inning and I got to take a chance. And like these guys are up there. So like I have to treat this like this is a postseason World Series type thing and where I might have no chance. Everybody knows that I'm going. I got to show it right here. I end up going, dude, end up being safe, end up like I stole that bag and I'm like, dude. That's sick. I feel like I just completed what I was supposed to do. End up scoring, and like obviously the rest is history, man. Get that opportunity, get a call up, dude, and yeah, it was a whole crazy couple weeks of emotions for sure.
Do you feel like because of where you came from, walk on, small school, big time long shot, you know, you were at one point 31 on the Mariners' top prospect list, and then one year you were 19, but you fell off that list. Do you think you appreciated it more than some other guys who have gotten called up where, you know, some guys get drafted and it's a certainty. But yeah. Paul Skeens knew Paul, you know, you knew Paul Skeens was going to be a big leaguer. You knew Dylan Cruz was going to be a big leaguer. Like things like, do you think like you stopped and smelled the roses more than most guys do?
Dude, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I was fully bought into that life, bro. So like every off season, I spent every off season out there in Arizona. At the Mariners spring training complex, just hanging around, right? They couldn't get rid of me, bro. I was fully entrenched in it. I loved it, bro. I took full advantage of it, right? I every day was beautiful, man. I definitely was fully engulfed in the moment, man. I remember everything, especially towards the back end of my career where like I had made it to the big leagues and then I'm like, okay, this is great. This is great, right? But like, I know I'm not going to be here forever. What's next? You know what I mean? So I definitely took it in, dude. Yeah, bro. I was definitely in the moment for the majority of it.
First knock, Jordan Zimmermann. Walk me through it.
Yeah, dude. So that was my first start. And I had alluded to it before in Alaska or in like the start of rookie ball. Coming off the bench sucks. So like I was getting my doors blown off in the big leagues. Coming into like 8-0 ball games, cold, right? Sitting for 7 innings and then getting a dude. And I'm so grateful. So grateful, but hitting dudes that throw 95 to 98 sitting on your hands, you know, and going in for Kepler or Buxton in the eighth or ninth inning, you know, that's tough to try to like grind out like good ABs, bro. So I got my first start and I knew I was going to get a knock, knew it off the bat, dude, knew it. I didn't know if I was going to get it that first AB, right? Or if I was going to get it that second AB, but I knew I was going to get that shit, dude. Leading off. First AB, dude, just, I think I flew out to center field and it might've been a 1-1 or 2-1 pitch or something like that. But I saw it, dude. And I'm like, it's over, dude. Knew it. Second AB. I think Torres was on second base, dude. And I hit a fastball up the middle, just missed Zimmerman's foot goes up and dude, I was going for second out of the box. So, like, I don't know if you can ever go back and rewind that, but you will see on the replay that I bust it because for whatever reason, they play deep in the big leagues, right? The ball flies. The balls are wound tight. This guy was playing deep in center field. I forget who it was, but I was busting it for two out of the box, dude. And I ended up slipping and creating a big divot going around first base. You could see it in the grass. Would have been crazy. Right. So scored, got the RBI knock, dude. It was crazy. It was great. I almost had a double in the center fielder's face. How crazy would that have been if I pulled out a double, just a hustle double in somebody's face to get somebody like to get it fired up, bro. It's remember it like it was yesterday.
What's the best part about being in the big leagues outside of the 7-0, you know, the outside of the game?
What's the best part about being in the big leagues outside of the game? Okay. So obviously, man. The treatment is fantastic. You don't have to worry about anything. And the world quite literally revolves around you. So anything that you want, anything that you need, anything you're thinking, anything you're feeling, if you want it, you can get it. And there are people that will sacrifice their time and their resources in order to make that come true for you. So that goes for literally anything. If you're sitting in the clubhouse pregame and you say, yo, I'd like two PS5s in my locker just to take home to my kids. like at the end of the game, like they'll be there, bow wrapped, anything you need. Like it's crazy how that works, bro. That's something that I'll definitely not miss, right? That's something I definitely miss, right? Where the whole world revolves around you.
Was there anything you were able to take advantage of like that? Like, did you feel comfortable to make a, maybe not a PS5 request, but like, can you go pick me up this meal or something like that? Was there anything you felt good about? Like, I've got the cachet for this.
So there were definitely things that I was able to do towards the back end of my career because I had some coin, right? So I had made my big league debut, and then I did 2020 and 2021 with the Cubs, where I was a minor league free agent, right? Where you start making a couple bucks. So it's like, okay, you can afford to do stuff like that. So obviously, a lot of things that enabled me to like benefit from were like moving costs, dude. So if you have a couple bucks set aside where it's like, hey, bro, this whole apartment, it's got to go. It's got to get packed up. I got to get out of here, bro. I had a bad year. I don't even feel like being here anymore. Here's a couple grand, right? Just figure it out. Make sure all the stuff gets back there and like, you can sell whatever you want, right? Like I've seen people do that. I haven't done that, right? But there's definitely ways to have that like speed up the process of getting in and out, dude, making stuff more efficient. A lot of it has to do with food. If you have specific food requests, bro, pregame, postgame, just things like that. You know what I mean?
You get that time with the Twins. We go into 2020, things get weird. You end up, you get called up with the Cubs in 2020. Walk me through just the experience of playing in a ghost town. You're in this historic stadium, one of the iconic stadiums. There's not a soul there. Not a fan, not a single fan. Is that, would you say that's the weirdest baseball game you've ever played in? Because you're back in the big leagues. It's this street, you're a kid playing in Wrigley, and it's weird. Times are weird in general.
Yeah, dude. So that was a Cubs versus White Sox game at Wrigley, a day game at Wrigley, Cubs versus White Sox, and a soul in sight. So it was definitely weird. It was cool. It was like, dude, I had an out in my contract like a day or two before that. And so they weren't going to call me up, and then they had to. So like, that's how that worked out. I was grateful for that time up there, but I could have elected free agency, right? I had an out where I could have gone somewhere else. I had a good year. I thought I was going to break, but of course COVID happened, bro. So it was definitely weird, being able to like be up there and see everybody like getting after it on a major league level. Major league competitors, and nobody was there to watch, dude. It was definitely weird, but like the game remained the same, bro. Just a whole bunch of rules with wearing masks and like washing your hands and stuff.
You go, you're the first cut in Cubs spring training in 2021. I would encourage everyone, if you've enjoyed this episode, you dive into it on your pod if you go deep down the feed, which I thought was really interesting, of like the true feeling like you didn't get a fair shot and feeling like at that moment you could speak up, which like young players don't usually feel that. I'm sure at that point, 29, 30 years old, you know, there's a difference there. You go through that year, you said, you know, you're playing with Trace Thompson. You have a good, not great year in Iowa. Kind of what went into the decision-making process of maybe it's time to think about something else in my life?
So how that worked, dude, it was to be completely honest with you, bro, I didn't get the COVID vaccine. And so I was told that if I didn't get the COVID vaccine, I wouldn't play in the big leagues that year. So like we had a whole bunch of outbreaks happen, especially towards the end of the year. I hit 260 with some stolen bases, and I was the only guy to start the year in Iowa and end the year in Iowa. They were calling dudes up, high A, double A, dudes that didn't even have double A time. Hey, get some show time, bro. Come get your life changed, right? You got the jab. Come on up here. That's how that worked out. And so I get it. I knew what I signed up for, right? That's how it kind of like played out. In 2021, man, I didn't like that. I didn't like the vibe from that. And to be completely honest with you, it's not like I was lighting the world on fire, bro. So it's not like I necessarily like deserved a call up hitting 260 in AAA, right? It's like kind of year after year thing. It's like, man, okay, I'm going to be 30 years old next year. What is going to be better if I try to maybe get a job last second? Maybe indie ball. I don't want to do that. So it's time to kind of step away. Dude, after that 2021 season, I went to go play in Mexico. I was going to go squeeze the last pennies out of the game that I could, right? Get over there, make some money. And I knew that's what it was, dude. I knew that's what it was. It was my time. So I had something lined up, bro. I didn't like the way that I was being treated. Obviously, with the whole COVID stuff, dude, I get it. I'm not complaining. Whatever, dude. So I made my plans. I was going to have a fallback option, bro. I don't have to take that BS. You know what I mean? I put it all out on the line for every single organization I put the jersey on for. I'm going to get penalized, right, for something like, it's time for me to get out of there. So I had something lined up behind the scenes, wealth management job. And so after that 2021 season, dude, I'm like, yo, smell ya. I'm out of here. Deuces. And then, like, they took away the vaccine rule. Now no one needed to have it in order to be back in the big leagues. And it's like, okay, whatever. But, like, dude, I was a 30-year-old. I wasn't necessarily getting better. I was in the prime of my life, and I wasn't getting an opportunity in the big leagues, right? Not the opportunity that I wanted to. So, dude, I weighed the pros and cons. Like, what's the opportunity cost of me spending another year of being, like, an average baseball player, a little bit above average baseball player, and maybe putting myself in a bind because I'm not earning what I should be earning, right? So kind of moved on with it. I had this idea about a podcast, nine-hole podcast in my head. Had the concept for it, just took a little bit longer than I wanted to kind of come to life, which brings us full circle here now.
What was that first year like? Because you seem like a dude who really liked the grind, liked the getting there at 12, breaking a sweat, playing all those games. You had suffered through being a walk-on and all that stuff. What was the first year like without that routine in your life?
The first year, so I went into wealth management then after that. And that first year, I just took that same exact mentality and I just crushed the wealth management game, dude. So I would be the first one to show up, right? Work starts at 9. Dude, I'll get in there at 7:15. I don't care. I'll get my work done. And like when I'm done, I'm out, right? I'm not here. I'm on task time, bro. I'm not on clock time. So like if I show up earlier than everybody else and I get my shit done and I work harder than everybody else and I'm a little bit more efficient, I'm not staying here as long as everybody else, right? Like that's how this works. That's how I figured this to work out, right? Like the quality that I'm able to output is directly tied to my input. So if I'm working harder than everybody, more efficient, showing up harder and like just outworking people, I'm going to bring that to the wealth management industry. However that works, I could be taught how to do that in baseball. I know I'm going to be able to crush this, right? So like, dude, that first year was nothing. It's fine, bro. I don't miss baseball at all. Second year, fine. Don't miss baseball. However, I have something in here where it's like, okay, I have the money that I made in baseball. I have the concepts that I learned in wealth management. I'm a CRPC. I'm credentialed, right? I'm legit now. I have this idea and this voice that I want to find. I want to get into coaching at some point, but I'm not sure where I fit in. But it's time, dude. Like, I know baseball. I should be back in there. So that's when I built a runway for the podcast, right? I had this idea for a podcast, threw some money into it, was able to leverage what I was doing in order to start a business and then get that business like making some money pretty early so I could invest in some nice equipment. And like, that's how we're here.
So if you could go back and give yourself a pep talk at age 21, you know, signing day with the Mariners, what would that pep talk look like?
Dude, the pep talk that it would look like is I would just say one thing and it would be, you're right. You're right. That's it. Everything. You're right. Just keep betting on yourself, dude. Right? You're right. Think you can make it to the big leagues, dude? You're right. Think you can start a podcast and fucking like do everything you say you're going to do? Now have no competition in the space, right? Be the dude, the authority figure. Like, you're right. You know, I think that's probably what I'd say. I think that's also like the message that I always try to preach with the nine hole stuff, dude. It's like, bro, whether you think you can or you think you can, like, dude, you're right. You know, there's so many limiting beliefs just because people are afraid to like get out of their comfort zone, do hard shit. You know, it's crazy how that works, but that's the only way you get better. It's the only way. Like, opportunity's coming, dude. Opportunity is coming, regardless if you're a nine-hole hitter that nobody cares about or you're a first-round SEC player. At some point, you're going to get an opportunity, and it's either going to expose you or reveal you. So, like, the only thing you can do is own noon to 6:30. That is literally the only thing you can do. Like, everything else is going to take care of itself. If I was going to have a pep talk with myself, dude, I would just say, you're right. That's it.
I got a quick rapid-fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Let's do it.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
In terms of?
Favorite place to play, favorite vibes, your call.
Okay. So I really, really, really enjoyed Albuquerque. I really, really, really did well in the new Las Vegas.
The hitters parks. Dude, favorite yeah. big league ballpark.
Favorite big league ballpark, man. I love Fenway. Obviously, like, Fenway is extremely special. Fenway will always be special.
Best pitcher you ever faced?
Oh, man. Best pitcher I ever faced. Dude, honestly, probably Rex Brothers or Boone Logan. Those lefties, man, they used to abuse me, dude. Probably those two, man. Yu Darvish was absolutely freaking nasty as well.
Best catcher you ever stole off? Like, what's the most impressive skin on the wall?
I don't know, man. I'd have to pass. I'd have to pass on that because no one's coming up. To be completely honest with you, bro, I did the majority of my damage in the minor leagues. So, like, you might not even know those guys, dude. You might not even know those guys.
As a Northeast guy, what's the best way to eat a Philly cheesesteak? Like, what's the right way?
Whiff. So you want that cheese whiz on there, dude. I like the onions. I'm not a huge, like, pepper guy. Some guys like to go with that. I like the cheese whiz. Dude, there are some great Philly cheesesteaks, right? There are some great Philly cheesesteaks. But the best Philly cheesesteak you will get is Phil's and Jim's, okay? Chester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philly. A little sketchy of an area, but if you go to Phil's and Jim's in Chester, PA, you will have the best cheesesteak that there is available out there, bro. I promise, it's crazy. But definitely, like, if you're going like downtown Philly, and it's one of those nights you're out there, it's late night, dude, you get the cheese whiz on there. It's hot.
Last question, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
I definitely have a nightmare story. So this was before I got to college. So this wasn't necessarily the minor leagues, okay? But, dude, I am on this. I'm on this travel team, okay? So, like, I'm playing with legit dudes. This is my senior year, so I am still uncommitted. I'm fully committed to baseball, but I'm still uncommitted. I'm not getting any opportunities, and, like, I'm just trying to get seen. So my mom paid a couple $1,000 for me to be on this travel team, and we go play in, like, Cary, North Carolina, and then at the World Wood Bat in Jupiter, right? You get a little bit of exposure. I get absolutely slapped at those tournaments, by the way. So, like, I am on this team, dude. It's legit. I'm playing with guys that are committed to Louisville, to Pitt. These guys are, I'm talking about, like, Sean Coyle, third rounder in 2009, I believe, by Boston, got like 1.5. So, like, they're legit dudes on this team. There are guys trying to be dudes on this team. And, like, I remember it's my first or second weekend, and I'm trying to still earn, like, my spot. These guys have been playing together for a while. They're all guys. They can hit home runs. They throw fuzz, dude. They're committed. Got scollies. All this good stuff. I remember I tried to be cool, and I put a dip in, right? Dipping is so stupid. And, like, the first time that
especially
I ever did
on the bus, I already know where this is,
dude,
going.
Dude, I tried to fit in with everybody else, right? So, like, other people were doing, I'm like, what's that? Oh, okay. Like, long cut, mint long cut, dude, over here, right? Put it in. 5 minutes goes by. I'm getting, like, the shakes now. Like, 10 minutes goes by. I'm like, yo, I got to take this out. And it's late at night. It's like 11, dude. We're doing an overnight trip, and we're going to get into Cary, North Carolina, super, like, 3, 4 a.m., and, like, I start getting the spins, dude. Everybody's asleep, and I remember that I tiptoed back to the back of the bus to get into the bathroom when everybody was asleep, and I threw up viciously, bro. Violently, viciously. Tried to be as quiet as humanly possible, but I remember it's coming out of my nose, and this was a bus that, like, a bunch of high school prospects were peeing in, right? So it's not necessarily, like, the most clean, like, it's not the cleanest, dude. There's pee everywhere, right? And here I am, my face in the bowl, bleh, like, throwing my guts up, dude. That's a nightmare story, but that is one that I'll probably never forget.
The second you said dip, I knew exactly,
dude,
where that was going.
It sucks, man. So stupid.
Everyone's had that first one that gets them. Ian Miller, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for having me, dude.
You got it, man. And that's it for today's episode. Big thanks to Ian Miller for stopping by, walking us through his career. If you enjoy Ian, you can check out his podcast, The Nine Hole, wherever podcasts are found. And we'll catch you next episode. Thanks for listening. And that's it for today's episode. Big thanks to Ian Miller for stopping by, walking us through his career. If you enjoy Ian, you can check out his podcast, The Nine Hole, wherever podcasts are found. And we'll catch you next episode. Thanks for listening.